Here. So tonight, I am delighted to welcome back to this space Daryl Morley Price. He is a Course in Miracles teacher, has taught for over 25 years, and has been giving public talks on the changing times in which we live since 1990. Tonight, he addresses us on the topic, The Earth Changes and Prophecy. Welcome back, Daryl.
Well, I actually haven't spoken on this topic quite a number of years. I started 20 years ago, gave a few talks, and then I just got the prompt, you could say, to stop talking about it. And then just a few months ago, I was told to start talking about it again, and I gave a talk about 3 weeks ago. And it feels good to be back on this subject. Excuse me. My voice tends to get hoarse when I speak loudly. And I want to thank all you guys for coming. I want to thank you for your interest in the subject. I've actually been kind of excited about talking about it all day, which is unusual for me because I actually don't like public speaking, but somehow I must be changing. I must be getting over that. So let me begin. Well, I want to thank Many Rivers Bookstore as well for having me back. I appreciate you guys taking a flyer on this topic, which I imagine no one has ever talked about here before. There's no book involved. I mean, there's a lot of books about kind of prophecy in the time, but there's no book in particular that, you know, that I'll be referring to. I do teach Course in Miracles. That's my day job, I guess you could say. And I may refer to that at times. Okay. So before I begin, let me just say there's a lot of material or a lot of things I want to cover. So I'm going to ask if everybody, you know, often people like to comment or have questions. If everybody could hold the comments and the questions until the end, I'll try and leave some time, and then I'll throw it open. Okay, because I want to try and get through the material and keep my flow going. So there's what I call the intro. There's several points I want to make to kind of set the groundwork, kind of let you guys know where I'm coming from, establish the context here of what I'm trying to say. And first of all, this talk is given from the spiritual perspective, and it's rooted in the spiritual perspective. And I'm gonna describe that and define that a little bit, because people have different ideas, different thoughts about what that is. Okay. So here's the way I describe that perspective, and actually that perspective I will also talk about later from my view and from what I've been given. That perspective, that state of mind, is also the solution. Okay, this perspective, the spiritual perspective, is that life is a multidimensional phenomenon and we are multidimensional beings. Okay. And mind, or awareness or consciousness, three different words for the same thing, is the ultimate cause of all that exists. And the manifest universe is the effect. Now, when I say the manifest universe, what I mean is not simply the physical universe, but there appear to be, many people have that experience, and there's a lot of teachings that point that out, appears to be, a number of more subtle dimensions to this manifest universe. There's one called the etheric, the astral, etc., etc. There's levels referred to as higher mental levels. All of that is part of the manifest universe, as I mean it. And all of that is actually coming into being as a result of the energy or the action of mind. All right. And again, in this spiritual view, evolution is a spiritual process. And in terms of this world, in terms of this planet, evolution is the evolution of, or the transformation of, the human mind. The physical is included, but from where I'm speaking, evolution is not simply microbes supposedly evolving all the way up into dinosaurs and whatever. Evolution, from the perspective I'm presenting, includes that, but it's basically about the evolution, the transformation of mind. That transformation of mind is also referred to as spiritual awakening, illumination, enlightenment, all those terms. Self-realization. Okay. And this view is grounded in the experience of yourself as spiritual being. Again, for any of you to really have real, let's say, substance in your mind, in your being, it has to be based on experience. It's experience that brings conviction. A spiritual view is just based on thoughts and feelings and reading books and stuff. I mean, that's all great. But in order for this view to really be grounded in you, that depends upon the experience of yourself as spiritual being. And this view is expressed or represented by a positive attitude and state of mind that is characterized by love, forgiveness, non-judgment, tolerance, kindness, inclusiveness, cooperation, and the recognition of the unity of all life. So this state of mind is life-supporting and life-affirming, and it recognizes that my self-interest is not simply confined to the narrow personal self-interest of the individual body-mind, but in its most important and fundamental sense, it includes the self-interest of all my fellow human beings and of all living things. Okay. And again, this perspective recognizes the necessity of freeing itself from all fear and all the forms it takes, as fear and love are incompatible. And fear in all its forms lie at the root of all our human problems. That's a fundamental, I'd say, spiritual premise. I know those of us that work with the Course, we focus a lot on healing the fear. In fact, the Course in Miracles teaches there's only two emotions. There's fear and there's love. And all the positive emotions are variations on love, and all the so-called negative emotions are simply variations on fear. Okay, now on the planetary level, I'm not done yet, this is kind of a long perspective here. On the planetary level, this view recognizes that the Earth is a living being. She is conscious. Traditional peoples recognize that. Many people have that experience, myself included. You could say the Earth is one of the modes through which what's called the divine feminine expresses. All right. And the Earth itself is surrounded by a planetary mind field, or field of mind, in which we all live and through which we are all connected. Although we appear to be separate beings because we are separate bodies, our minds are nevertheless all connected through this planetary field of mind. The experience of separation, of being cut off from everyone else, is just part of the illusion. Okay. And in addition, we are connected with all living things. Again, we were all connected through this one field of mind which we live in, and the planet as well is surrounded by subtle energy fields which we also share. Okay. And to which we are also connected. And in addition to that, there is what we call a collective human consciousness that, again, we all share. In fact, perhaps a way to sum this up is that mind is singular at all the levels at which it, say, manifests, whether it's what we call absolute mind, divine mind, Christ mind, Buddha mind, or whether it's mind in the manifest universe. Mind is nonetheless singular. It's not chopped up into little pieces of apparently separate beings. That's just part of the appearance. I think all the spiritual traditions teach that. Okay. I think actually the intro is the longest part of the talk. I'm glad you guys are staying with me. Now, the second thing I want to say is that this talk is simply a message, all right? I'm going to take my sandals off. This talk is simply a message. I'm not any kind of expert or authority. I don't have the answer to all the physical problems we face. How life is supposed to look like in the physical sense in the future, I have no idea. I have perhaps some hopes in that direction, as I think everybody does, but again, this talk is coming from the spiritual level, because it's from the level of mind, which is the level that spiritual practice and teaching addresses. It's from the level of mind, ultimately, that all our problems arise, all of our inventions, all our institutions, the way we do everything and use everything. It all comes from our state of mind, our state of consciousness, what we value, what we don't, what we feel connected to, etc., etc. And the modern mind is, unfortunately, a mindset that is fundamentally alienated from nature and from itself and from the planet. Okay, so I just want to say it's not my intent, nor do I have the right to persuade or convince anybody of anything. So I would just ask, if you wish, just listen with an open mind and heart, and just let what I say, pass right through, and what seems true or useful, what sticks, keep, and what doesn't, disregard. Okay. And I've been given this form of just actually all the work I do from the standpoint of there's a higher level of mind, call that spiritual mind. Those of us that work with the Course in Miracles call that the Holy Spirit. That's a universal principle. It exists in and of itself, but it is also a part of every mind, as mind is one. Another way to describe that is a universal inspiration. And that universal inspiration is available to everybody. I also call it the spiritual guidance principle. And so I've been given this outline and the points to cover, etc., etc. I'm doing my best to just listen so that I can try and come from that inspired place rather than just from my own memory banks. Okay. Now, point number three, this was the last point, introductory point I think I'll have to make. I'm going to be talking about the condition, again, of the planet, the state of life as we're living it now, all the circumstances, things that are going on, I'm going to be addressing as well. I call the modern mentality, the conventional human consciousness, the ego mind. And it's really hard to talk about any of those things without sounding negative or critical. And I just want to make the point that I'm not judging or condemning anyone or anything. Again, those of us who teach the Course in Miracles, the Course teaches no one is guilty. There is no sin. There's only error. And it's from that perspective that I'm speaking. And if we don't talk about errors that we're making, whether it's in my individual life or whether it's on a planetary level, if we don't look clearly at errors or mistakes, at what we're doing that's destructive or self-destructive, without fear and defensiveness, we can't really talk about it honestly, and we can't really do anything about it. So I'm speaking from that perspective to just addressing the errors that we're making, let's say, as a species, as humanity. Okay. Another way to put it, speaking from the Buddhist perspective, they use the term discriminative wisdom. And I believe by that they mean to discriminate between that which is helpful and positive, life-affirming, and that which is negative and destructive and self-destructive. So again, I'm speaking from that perspective, addressing the errors. Okay. Now, perhaps the reason I'm giving this talk, or have been, directed to talk about this subject again at this time, is because I feel, in a way, it's time to really think about just the situation we're in, the circumstances we face, what's going on in life, what's going on in the human mind. And I guess it's not that people aren't already thinking about that somewhat. Again, here I'm kind of preaching to the choir. I know here in Sebastopol at many rivers, there's a lot of places where I could talk on this subject and people would just get angry, not want to hear it. But I think at this time, that's kind of what I'm suggesting, is I think it's time for everybody to, well, for as many who are interested, again, especially progressive, spiritually minded people, to to just sort of include in your thinking and your consideration what's going on the planet, what's going on with our fellow human beings, what's going on all over the place. And not from a perspective of fear, because fear is not helpful, and that's not what I'm trying to say arouse in people, but just from a perspective of honesty and clarity, and just from the perspective perhaps of how can I be part of the solution. And there was a teacher named Krishnamurti. Some of you may be familiar with Krishnamurti. He talked about this for 60 years. He said, basically, all our human problems arise from our state of consciousness, from our lack of understanding of our own mind. And everything we do is an acting out of where we are in our mind. And he made the point that wars and all the crazy stuff we see out there has its counterpart, its reflection in my mind. Of course, the miracles does the same thing. The anger, the fear in me, the hatred or the rage in me is the same anger, fear, hatred, and rage that drives wars. And again, from that perspective, every one of us can be part of the problem and part of the solution, depending on where we want to be. Okay. Now, I came across a comment by the Dalai Lama recently, just when I was on the internet. It's a comment he made back in 1998. I think he summed the situation up pretty good. The day he received the Nobel Prize in Oslo, he was interviewed by Andrew Harvey, who some of you may be familiar with. Andrew's written a lot of books on spiritual topics. And at one point in the interview, the Dalai Lama leaned forward. I'll paraphrase him a bit. And he said to Andrew, it's really, really important, he said, that people realize we're not in a crisis situation. He was speaking about the state of the earth, the state of humanity. We are in an emergency situation. That was a point he made with great emphasis. And that was in 1998. And from everything I can see, things have just gotten a lot worse since then. And the way I would put it, we are in a situation that's unsustainable, basically, and unstable in a very fundamental way. And it just seems obvious to me, and perhaps to many others, that there's just going to have to be big changes coming, probably sooner than later. Some people hope later, some people think later. I tend to think sooner. In our way of life and just in life in general here on planet Earth. And the way I put it, it's not really if, that's not really the issue. The issue to me is when. In fact, I'm kind of expecting major changes in our way of life. Again, I don't know exactly how that's going to look. There is a lot of prophecy out there. There are a lot of predictions out there. A lot of people have different agendas, different ideas of how it's going to look or how they want it to look. And you have, on the one hand, I think you have sort of fundamentalist Christians who are, I guess they're going to be lifted out of here or in a rapture, undergo the rapture or something. And then on the other hand, you have the view over here, which originally came from the raw material, channel material, the early 80s, that says the whole planet's going to shift up to a higher dimensional reality. And that's my favorite one, actually. I like that one because that's a real positive outcome. And in that one, everybody that has a more positive orientation, more positive than negative, actually they express it as service to others rather than service itself, is going to go along for the ride and shift up to the higher dimension. And those that are more in a negative frame of mind are going to get to stay in this third dimensional time-space continuum. Exactly how that looks, I don't know. I don't know if it's ever explained. But the nice thing about that is it seems very cosmically fair. If you're more negatively oriented and you want to be angry and you want to attack and you like that, you get to stay in that environment. And those of us that don't, we get to leave. And I find that really cosmically fair. But that's kind of the one I'm voting for, to tell the truth. But, you know, from my perspective, I don't think anybody really knows how it's going to look or where it's going to go. And there is some agreement, there is some commonality of agreement, again, that big changes will happen, that our society has to change, and that we have to stop killing the planet, And I think there is some agreement as well that, you know, that we're moving in or have moved into that time of great changes. So as far as the particular details, I don't think anybody knows. But it does seem obvious, I think, to a lot of people. It certainly seems obvious to me. And there's information I've gotten from spiritual sources is that there are big changes coming. So this might be the time This might be the time. Thank you, Jenny. Well, really, yeah, really has a spot. I guess this is time maybe for me to make my predictions. I've been getting information from spiritual sources starting about 20 years ago myself, and predictions about happenings in this, and quite a bit of it's been accurate and some of it has not been. But back about 2005, I was given some information. I call it downloads. Sometimes they have visions or downloads or whatever, you know. Again, this higher mind is a part of every mind, and for some reason, for some of us, information comes in and comes through. And like I say, it's not always correct. Evidently, the future is somewhat mutable. There's always a certain plasticity involved, but it's so often been accurate that I have a tendency to trust it. The tricky part always is getting the time frame right. Okay, so this is kind of the doom and gloom part, guys. I'm about to go into now. What I was told back in 2005, I was told things have simply gone too far. The negativity is too strong, the momentum is too great, and it can't be stopped. In other words, we are going to have to go through big changes. There's going to be a lot of disruption, and it's going to be pretty intense and possibly very unpleasant, and I don't think any place is going to escape it. And there will very possibly be a lot of suffering. This is what I was told. However, the good news is that I was told it won't be the worst-case scenario. It won't be the end of the world. Human race won't disappear, etc., etc. We are not going to wipe ourselves out. That's the information I got. And as well, actually, let me go into the time frame for a minute. And my sense is that we are right now, we are entering or right at the beginning of that time. I think we're going to start seeing real big. I mean, we've already seen changes, haven't we? I'm sure everybody's noticed how crazy everything is getting, haven't you? How life goes faster and faster. There seems to be a lot more chaos. Our political system, half of it seems to be completely insane. You know, just not at all interested in facts or reality. And you know, I'm not going to go there. Don't get me started. As the old joke goes.
One half is crazy, the other half is insane.
Yeah, there you go. I've always been crazy, but it kept me from going insane, like a country western song goes. Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, so that's kind of what I get, guys. I mean, if we're really lucky, and those, let's say, the power centers, those that have their hands on the levers of power, they might be able to, with smoke and mirrors, like they've been doing for so long and practicing the voodoo economics that's been going on for so long, they might be able to keep it going another 10 years. I used to say 20, but now I have to say 10. I think that's highly, 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 highly unlikely. It just seems to me the situation is so unstable. I'm not just talking about unsustainable, because we could probably continue to degrade the Earth. Nature and Earth ecosystems for another 20, 30 years before they collapse. But I'd say 10 years at the outset, and I think it's actually that time is here. So perhaps that's why I've been prompted again. I've been asked again to talk on this subject. However, well, and then we have, although that's not where I'm coming from, but then we have all the prophecies and predictions, and everybody's probably familiar with the whole 2012 thing, right? I mean, that's been on the TV, that's been on the internet. There's a number of different books about it. There's the supposedly the original Mayan calendar that charts this long era of some period of 5 or 6,000 years, and 2012 the calendar comes to an end. It's at the end of time. And that's interpreted different ways. Time will end, or we'll enter a new era, etc., etc. And then there's others as well who make predictions around 2012. So it does seem like there's some agreement that we're getting real close. That's all I, you know, that's all I can say. And again, I don't know about anybody else, but it sure feels that way to me. And I tend to think as I said, it's a lot closer rather than farther away. I think it's just around the corner. So like I said, I don't know if anybody knows exactly how it's going to begin or what events might precipitate it and what it's going to look like. And I sincerely hope I'm wrong. I sincerely pray that I'm wrong. But I fear that I'm not. And so again, perhaps that's why I'm talking about this, because there's an old expression, to be forewarned is to be forearmed. And by that I don't mean, you know, run out and buy yourself firearms and a lot of ammunition, but I mean just to be prepared for events or circumstances or things that can happen, changes that can occur. If you're prepared for it, if you've let it into your mind as a possibility, you're less likely to be startled or tip over into a fear state. And there is nothing to fear. Again, the fear is never justified. Fortunately, you're not a body. That's only a part of what you are. So from that, my teacher used to say that all the time. He said, if things get really bad and you don't make it, he said, no problem. You're not a body. You get a rather casual attitude on it. It's not everybody. Not everybody would agree with him on that one. Yeah. Okay. I did get something that was kind of specific regarding changes that are coming. And this has a direct bearing, I guess, on what I'm talking about tonight. I was told that although the big changes are going to affect everyone and everything, I don't think anyone, whether wealthy or poor, I don't think there's going to be any place to hide. Nevertheless, I was told certain areas, life will be more pleasant and more reasonable, and people will kind of keep things under control more so than in other areas. And the key here, and even within a country or even within regions, and the key here, I was told, is can the people in that area, in this region or this town, come together and work together, rise above their differences, come from a higher place than the usual egoic, self-centered self-interest, and just work together for everybody's benefit. And in places, this is my understanding, in places where that happens, whether on small scale or larger scale, life can, again, continue, can be much more pleasant and be much easier, much more pleasant to get through circumstances and the changes and the things that are coming. So, I'll just throw it out there. And, of course, that fits right in with the main premise of this talk, is that each of us can be and is either part of the solution or part of the problem, and that's a choice that everybody has to make. It's a choice you make as to where you are in your mind and what you value, what kind of energy you're putting out. All right. Any questions so far? I just got to ask if anybody has a question or a comment. Yes?
I'm curious about because I've been following the Course in Miracles for about a year now.
Mm-hmm.
And my understanding is that the only time, the only purpose of time is to teach us to heal.
Mm-hmm.
And that, in fact, there is no future. There is no past. Mm-hmm. There is only now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if... What do you feel the purpose of your talk is? Is it to prepare one to be in the present and to be as positive in the present right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my fundamental premise. And a little further along, I will again be talking about the state of mind that, from my understanding, is the solution. And that is a state of mind that lives in the present. Absolutely. But remember, as human beings, I'll use the term as minds, spirit, soul, in association with a body. We are experiencing this thing called time, aren't we? Sequential time. So the Course says there is no time. That is true, absolutely. Okay, but don't confuse the levels here. You want to live in that present all the time, but yet tomorrow if you have a job or tomorrow you have an appointment with a dentist, you have to take that into account. Right? So it's in that sense that I'm speaking, or have been asked to speak, I assume, about possible future events. So you can start preparing right now, because being in the present and healing now and doing your spiritual practice now and going through your awakening right now is the best thing you can do. Does that work for you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
The other thing that the Course in Miracles says that kind of surprised me is that defending is essentially an attack.
Mm-hmm.
And that, and I do this quite a bit, that planning for the future is a kind of a defense.
Yeah, it's an attack on God, it says.
Right. And so when I hear something like this, it's like, well, how do I plan for this? You know, it doesn't seem to me that it would be about stocking up on water or stocking up on food or, you know, trying to, you know, build a shelter. I mean, that all feels like a defense.
I would agree. Now, you notice I haven't suggested that anybody
do
that.
No. So, really about awakening.
Yeah, it's really about awakening, about being present right now and doing what you need to do right now. And a little later, I hope we have the time, and I probably might need to skip through to that part, but a little later I'll talk about so-called practical suggestions that I would offer to folks. And the most practical suggestion that I would offer to anybody, and this is, you know, this is right from the Course, but again, I'm talking about what I mentioned earlier about that spiritual guidance. I call that a guidance principle. It's in mind. It's in your mind. We call it the Holy Spirit. Those of us that work with a Course, others may use another term. But the most practical thing you can do, both for your spiritual awakening and according to any change you might need to make in your life, whether it's next hour or next day or next week or next year, that higher knowing knows what is the best course of action for you at every moment, at any time, etc., etc. Okay. And it knows the future. So it can tell you even what you need to know.
All right, so if I'm in my head thinking, should I do this, should I do that, I don't do anything until there's a knowing that, oh, now it's time to move, and it comes from a deeper place.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be my recommendation, and that's what the Course attempts to teach. And I think, and I'm reasonably familiar with lots of other spiritual teachings. I don't know if they address that so much, but certainly it just seems it is a valid general principle. Many people working with various spiritual approaches or doing their own thing have found out that it's possible to receive a guidance or direction specifically in your life by which you can make decisions. And I'm of the opinion, I think that sort of, we want to call that guidance, those hints sneak through into just about everybody's life occasionally. I mean, almost everybody at some time has just had a feeling, don't do this, or feeling about do this, and it was correct. And you had no way of knowing, did you? Mm-hmm. And you may have been told not to do something, and by not doing it, you avoided a possible catastrophic situation. So it's like that principle, it's a part of your mind, it's universal, and it's extremely helpful. And I highly recommend that everybody work with that. And that does take a commitment, that takes an interest, that takes a willingness to surrender. It doesn't do any good to ask if you're not going to follow the directions. If you're going to ask and it's just, you're just kind of curious, it's probably not going to work. You could say there's a channel, there's a channel or a conduit between, let's say, the superficial human consciousness, the conscious mind, in association with the body, and that higher knowing. And that channel is just full of obstacles. It's just full of shit. All kinds of crap in there. And you could say part of the function of the spiritual practice is to clear out that channel. Clear that out so that you can receive guidance. And there is an art to that, and that takes time. And so that's when 20 years ago I was telling people, I would really recommend you start doing this, and the sooner the better. And here I am 20 years later, and I'm still saying it. And it is always about the present. Both you guys are right, absolutely on the money for that. Okay. Can I talk a little bit about the state of the earth? Is that...
You mean how bad it is?
Yeah.
No.
You don't want me to talk about
it. We all know that.
It's like
I shouldn't have asked that question, should I? I shouldn't have asked that question. Okay.
Yeah,
that's true. It is obvious. I was given a number of things, but you're right. It is pretty obvious that we're in kind of bad shape. Well, let me just talk about the state of the earth from a more subtle level. When I came driving, I was back in the upper Midwest for a number of years. That's where I spent time part of an academy with my teacher. It was an academy devoted to working with A Course in Miracles. And when I came back out west, back in 2006, it was really striking to me as I headed back out here. I mean, just about all the land in the West has been overgrazed. I'm sure everybody's sure of that. I mean, is aware of that. It's been overgrazed, and it's this and that, and you know, there's been a lot of droughts and everything. And that was kind of obvious to the eye, but what I could feel just with my mind, you could say with a deeper level of feeling, I could feel that the earth was just forlorn, forsaken, and wounded. She was like crying. And when I came back here to Sonoma County, and again, I've been in and out of the county the last 4 years, and I've been living here the last couple. Again, it was like the earth was just crying out. Just crying out. And it's not simply the physical damage, you know, that we've done, that has been done to the earth. The earth has a... It's like there is a series of energy fields that surround the earth, and these energy fields have to do with maintaining a certain equilibrium balance, even of physical forces. I believe they affect the weather, they affect the volcanic action and earthquakes and everything. And again, because of our, not simply our physical activities, but because of where this, you know, this gets directly back to my first point, because of where we are in our minds and what the human mind is putting out into those fields are disturbed. And the spiritual forces are the forces that are part of that that work to keep things in balance. Can't really keep them in balance anymore. In fact, I would say from that perspective, climate change is not simply CO2. There's more going on than that. And again, you could say the state of the earth. Again, I'm going to link it up to our state of consciousness, the state of the earth. What we see outwardly is simply a reflection of what's going on in our mind. Now, in my lifetime, I've noticed the human mind just seems to be becoming more and more chaotic, more worn out, more paranoid often, and busier and busier. It's really astounding. It's like life has become a race without a finish line. And in a general sense, the question isn't asked, where is this going to stop, or, you know, do I need to do this, or do I need to keep moving like this? It's like there's just a momentum that's carrying, you know, so much of society. Again, I'm talking to the choir. And that momentum, that energy that's being put out from the mind, from the emotions, is affecting the fields. And that's why ultimately the healing isn't just about stopping doing, you know, the activities or curtailing our activities are so physically destructive to the planet. Ultimately, it's about getting our minds right as well. Because without that, the Earth just can't return to her equilibrium. And anyway, it's our mindset. Everything that proceeds from there is what's destabilizing the whole system. What's destabilizing the planetary system, I would say. Because I'm making some energetic connections here. I certainly can't prove them. But I'm just throwing it out there. It certainly seems that way to me. And I'm not sure how many of you have a relationship, let's say, with the consciousness that permeates nature, the consciousness that is Mother Earth, or the various spiritual forces or intelligences that are part of this. But if you do, you will feel the great disturbance and pain throughout that area. I mean, it's almost overwhelming. At one point, I had to detach because I just couldn't take it. And I think many traditional peoples are just heartbroken by what's going on. It's not only what they see, it's what they feel. Okay. Well, maybe now it's time to talk about the solution.
Oh, yeah.
What a relief.
Yay.
Okay. Well, I've sort of been talking about the solution all along. I'm just going to sum it up a little bit now. And the problem begins in the mind, and we all share that mind, don't we? We are, as I said, our minds are connected. We're all part of that collective human consciousness, and we're all part of the planetary mind. We're actually one organism. We're actually one mind, one energy field, and that's just the way it is. And again, anybody that has developed a sensitivity to feel that sees that is true. That's not something anybody can convince anybody of. It's not something I can demonstrate or show or prove to anybody. Actually, it's like spiritual experience itself. If you do the work, if you really want to develop that sensitivity and open your mind and awaken, the proof is in the pudding. You will find out that there is much more to you than you thought. And everything is actually, here's a point made by the Course in Miracles, to mention traditional peoples, everything is actually communicating with you all the time. Communication is going on continuously through the realm of mind and energy. And the only reason it's not being received is because the mind has shutters or barriers. But when you start removing those barriers, when you start opening the shutters, when you make room, when you let the mind settle back into its normal depth and rediscover its real sensitivity, let it expand, you will find that you can communicate with everything. You could say energetically, because again, everything is energy. I want to step it up a level. Everything is light. Behind everything is light. You develop your spiritual vision, you'll see light behind everything you look at. And it's actually one of the recommendations I think I got as a practical recommendation. I think it's good for each individual, if you're so inclined, as part of your spiritual process, to spend time in nature and maybe open your mind up and begin to feel that connection. And it's obviously real good for the earth. I think what's left of the indigenous tradition of the Incas in Peru, Peru some time ago, I read about it, and what's left of their traditional shamans or medicine people, they actually were asking the people that came over they were working with, they said, spend some time, you know, meditating or connecting with Mother Earth. They said, she needs healing, and we can give her energy just like she gives us energy. So that's actually one of the practical recommendations I have, and it fits right in with spiritual practice. Again, for those of you who are so inclined, some people's tradition or practice isn't necessarily going to include that. But perhaps another thing that I'm talking about here, maybe this is the point of the whole talk, is to suggest that we just expand our idea of spiritual practice or spiritual responsibility. It's not that it hasn't been implied, but I'm just going to say it again, to include the whole earth, to include every living thing, and include every moment, every minute. And again, whatever I do that is best for me, positive for me, that is in alignment with that which is highest in me, any moment, is not only the best thing for me, it's the best thing for everybody else with whom I interact, everybody else in my vicinity, or everybody else on the planet. Again, what is in your highest self-interest is always going to be in the highest self-interest of everybody else. Okay. So because we're all part of the same mind, Because, see, we're all part of the solution or part of the problem, and the choice is always up to us. That's a, I think, a slogan from the 60s, I think from Eldridge Cleaver, said you're either part of the solution or you're part of the problem. And that is literally true. And break it down, just like in spiritual practice, you can break it down to moment to moment. Any one moment, I'm actually in a state of love, of peace, of joy. I'm radiating that energy, and my behavior and my words follow from that. Or I'm flipped over, if you want to call it, to the dark side. I'm caught in negativity, some version of fear, and I'm radiating that. And of course, they feel very differently. They feel very, very different. And anybody that pays attention, you'll really notice the difference between those two states. Okay, so the state of mind that, again, this message says the state of mind that is the solution, I'm going back a little to how I started, is a state of mind that's aligned with spirit or spiritual reality and lives from that focus or alignment and understanding. It takes responsibility for its emotions, feelings, and actions, and lives in the present from a life-positive and life-affirming perspective that is characterized by love, non-judgment, forgiveness, tolerance, cooperation, and inclusiveness, and is not dominated by narrow self-interest or fear and defensiveness. So this is pretty similar to the original one I gave. I guess I threw in the present. And again, that mindset recognizes the unity and interdependence of all life. And such a mind is the solution. I guess that's the crux of the message. Such a mind is the solution, individually and collectively. Again, from that perspective, each of us can be part of the solution. You look out and you see the huge problems, you see all the stuff that's going on, and there's people out there functioning as activists in various ways doing things. That's great. The whole thing seems too big, really, doesn't it, to turn around from each individual. And yet each of us is, nonetheless, able to be part of the solution. And that's, the Course in Miracles is teaching that. And I think all the various spiritual traditions are teaching that one way or another, even if they might not define it quite so broadly. So, another way to put it, leading a life that is seriously devoted to spiritual awakening, to that which is highest in you, and if you are doing that, that's a 24/7 job, that's a 24/7 focus, leading that life and doing your best moment to moment. Participate in that process to heal everything in you that is fear, that is self-destructive, any version of it, so that you are continually moving, let's say, in the direction of that which is highest in you. You are healing all in you that is not love. That state of mind, if you're living like that, you're part of the solution. And your behavior and your words will naturally unfold from that, and you may end up become some sort of activist. You may be out there, you know, whatever, throwing Coke bottles at whaling ships. I don't know, all the various stuff that people do. That's all fine, but it seems to me without changing your mind, changing your state of mind, and becoming peace in that fundamental sense, peace and love and forgiveness, without radiating that, your behavior and your actions, your activism will be affected and tainted by the various egoic considerations, no matter how noble the cause may be. So, that's what I'm suggesting. And let's see, is there time? A couple more things. Even though this is a time of great changes, and it may seem scary to people who really look at it, it's also a time of great opportunity. It seems like to me, I think a lot of people have had that experience, there's like a lot of light, a lot of spiritual energy seems to be poured into the planet. It's like we're getting a lot of help. There's all kinds of spiritual teachings from all over the world and all the different traditions that are available. There's an amazing amount of information available on the internet. Again, leading a spiritual life is not just reading, not just attending workshops, but the material has to be there. The concept has to be there as well. There are many teachers, many traditions that are accessible. And because this is a time of great change, I would say there's a certain urgency to it. That famous expression of Samuel Johnson, the knowledge that a man is about to be hanged in a fortnight concentrates the mind wonderfully. I would say we're in one of those times. The knowledge that things could be really, really changing really fast, I would think, would be an added sort of incentive to undergo transformation, to make that commitment. Again, because I think it really is true, everything I can see, from everything I can see and everything I've been told and everything I sense. In the spiritual sense and in the greater sense, you're either part of the problem or you're part of the solution. And at this time, it's real important for everybody to be part of, I think, the solution, at least as many people as possible. Okay, and again, the ultimate outcome, we talk about what's all the various prophecies, I mean, except for the really, you know, Armageddon kind of end of the world things. All the various prophecies, as well as information I've gotten from spiritual sources, say that this time of changes we're going through is ultimately going to lead to a more just and equitable society, and a humanity in which there is a more spiritualized or spiritually aligned consciousness. So there is a silver lining in the cloud, something to look forward to, you could say, and that seems positive to me. And yeah. So I have a few practical tips or advice to offer. Well, maybe first let me see. Does anyone have any questions or comments?
I'm interested in how, if you'd be willing to talk a little bit about how you discriminate between rational kinds of evaluations of situations, mm-hmm. and that which you receive, because you've talked several times about being prompted in a way or mm-hmm. being moved, and I'm just wondering if you could say something about that. I don't have that experience often, mm-hmm. or you know, it's not something that I live in.
Okay.
So I'm interested in that.
Well, basically, I mean, if I'm speaking for myself, and it's what I recommend as well to the students I work with, and it's what the course is based on, the idea, I think in Sufism they expressed it as leading a guided life, okay? It's opening your mind up to receive guidance and direction all the time on a regular basis from the higher mind. And what that takes is an interest in it. It takes a dedication. It takes the basically a regular, what you want to call spiritual practice of being present in your mind, being aware of the mind and the way it works.
What I'm really interested in is your shit detector.
Oh, that's what you're interested in. Oh.
Yeah, it's like, how do you distinguish? Mm-hmm. I mean, what is?
Oh, in other words, is authentic
because
the ego blabbing?
Because the channel, as you said, can get pretty
ego blabbing. Well,
and then people go askew. I mean, you see it all the time.
Oh, absolutely.
Preaching all kinds of things,
absolutely.
And they really believe that. This is the revealed truth.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And it's obvious to me they don't have their shit detectors not there.
Yes.
So I'm just wondering, how do you personally cheat?
Yeah, that's a good question. Remember, I mentioned earlier, I talked about developing this guidance is an art. And it takes a while. It takes a long time. And indeed, if you get something or seem to be guided to do something that's really crazy or it's going to be destructive or hurtful to someone else, if you receive guidance that is exclusionary, it makes someone else less than that. I mean, it's pretty obvious when you receive any direction or guidance, okay, that is off the mark. It becomes obvious. And yeah, using rationality or common sense in terms of receiving that is a part of that. There's absolutely no doubt about it. Now, some of the people you were talking about, see, and receiving authentic spiritual guidance and being able to work with it is inseparable from the process of getting to know your own mind, the insanity of your mind, all the habits and the, just the egoity and the rationalizations and the denial. The two are part of the Course in Miracles, is kind of one seamless, inclusionary sort of hologram in terms of the practice. And the people you referred to who, you know, kind of go off in the deep end, I'd say, oh, and these are people who don't know their own mind and are functioning generally often from a context of exclusionary religious belief that, you know, we have the answer, or I have the answer, and others don't, you see. And that is by definition imbalanced and crazy, and you are by definition going to get imbalanced and crazy advice. And it is just as easy, indeed, to receive information from the ego. You know, you want to call it the voice of the ego. I mean, the guidance comes a lot of different ways. I hear a voice in my mind. Usually, or I get pictures or images. Sometimes I get a whole download that then just kind of opens up, like you just downloaded a file on your computer, and my mind has to translate it into words. And just having worked with it for 25 years, you learn, you know, you learn to distinguish. And if there's any doubt, don't act. And again, I don't think someone can develop that or use that faculty intelligently or rationally unless they're functioning within the framework of a spiritual practice and a spiritual teaching that is also rational and intelligent and that is inclusionary. Now, it's very difficult, let's say, if you're a fundamentalist Christian or Muslim or something else, I think it's going to be impossible for you to get rational guidance, because the distortions of your belief system, the fact you don't know your own name, is going to make it impossible. And then indeed you're going to be told to go out and kill somebody. That's not what I'm talking
about. It
sounds
like it would be very important who you surround yourself with, because,
and who you work with.
Yeah, they could.
Yeah. And yet you can still, you know, you can be told things even that rational mind, like one of the first examples that I, when I actually received guidance, the voice spoke to me. I mean, you can be told things that may seem a little crazy from the human perspective, but they're not going to be harmful or hurtful to anyone else, and they seem to be in alignment with spiritual principles. So I'm just going to share this with you. I was living up in Alaska. I moved up to Alaska. I did a lot of backpacking when I was younger. Spent a lot of time out in the wilderness. I would always go solo, and I would always go unarmed. And in Alaska, there's a lot of grizzly bears, a lot of black bears. And the black bears up there eat people, too. It's not just the grizzly bears. All the bears up there eat people, you know, or can be quite dangerous. And in Alaska, they tell you, don't go into the bush unarmed and don't go in alone. And I always go in unarmed and I always go alone. So I was thinking there just for a moment after I got up there, buying myself a high caliber handgun or shotgun with slugs, which is what they recommend. And the Holy Spirit spoke clearly to me, and he said, if you go back into the bush with no intent to hurt anything, nothing will hurt you. And I act on that. So I went back into the bush, and I never got bothered. I ran the black bear, but I was backing down, or they backed down. Sometimes we had a little Mexican standoff for a moment. They always backed down. And in one place I camped, I had a grizzly bear. I never would see him, but he wasn't that far from my camp, evidently, because one day some people came running through my camp, kind of wild-eyed. They'd run into him down there in the ravine, just not all that far from my camp. He never came up and bothered me. And I had food. You know. Of course, he had berries down there, and bears love berries. But so the thing about spiritual guidance is you will be told things that do not necessarily jive with your human thinking, but if it's authentic guidance, it will not be something that will hurt others or that will go against spiritual law. And it is, when you talk about surrounding yourself, yeah, with intelligent people, with honest people, but also working with an authentic teaching. And self-honesty is absolutely essential in the spiritual path. I mean, if another way to describe perhaps the journey of awakening is you become aware of all your forms of self-deception. And you have to become aware of those and release those and let those go. Living a spiritual life doesn't mean you're not rational. You know, you don't use your rationality, your intelligence. But actually, rationality even has a higher kind of rationality. And To me, it was entirely rational to go back into the bush, which I continue to do to this day. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. But I didn't want to distract you from the practical suggestions, though.
Okay. Yeah, we got a little time. It's 25 till. Okay. Jim, can I go on for a little while longer?
Please.
Okay.
Although we three of us have an 8:30 appointment, so we've got to go.
Oh, okay.
I just want to thank you. So
well, thank you. Thank you for coming. Thank you guys for coming.
Really
we're losing our audience little by little.
Thank you.
Appointments.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. Thank you. Take care.
Is it all right? Time for one more question?
Yeah, sure.
I would like to know what might be the simple recommendation for. You're explaining to us, which I agree with, is that fear is really the base of all of the issues that we're dealing with. Personally and worldwide. So as an individual, when we sense that we're experiencing fear, whether it's showing up in the form of anger or even confusion or fear or pain, what's the best technique for moving that fear and coming into into self and into present?
It's really not a matter of technique, because
maybe small choice of word. But what's the best way?
Yeah.
Or the way.
You could say, from a certain fundamental perspective, again, that the whole process of spiritual awakening is a process of healing fear. Right, so in that sense, dealing with fear, is a part of your spiritual practice. It's a part of the moment-to-moment practice. Fundamentally, I think just what you were addressing, what you were talking about, being aware when it arises in all its forms. Being aware when it arises, and if you are aware as it arises. Again, those of us that work with a course, because I think maybe not everyone would agree, but certainly the Course in Miracles and some of the other traditions say you need to always call on that higher mind to help. Okay, so you get in the habit of resting in a state of accessibility or contact to that. But anytime you feel fear, which is what I'm getting to suggest in any of its forms, whether it's fear or anger, anxiety, you want to stop what you're doing, stop your thoughts, right? Thoughts are always feeding fear or arouse it or are the result of it. And relax. And sort of bring yourself back into the present. And then ask yourself, if you want, do I like the way I feel? And that kind of brings it all to a halt. And then you can choose again. So I choose to feel differently. Now again, this to me, all the various spiritual practices, they're really an art rather than, they're an art, they're a process, they're kind of they're an ongoing process, an ongoing exercise of your willingness to be present, of your willingness to change and choose again. They're an ongoing remembering. And just any time you notice fear, to stop what you're doing, to stop the process, not act it out. And remind yourself you can choose again, and then choose to put your mind elsewhere. It's not necessarily easy to do. Of course, to all those folks who work with a course, my advice is almost always the same. Part of it always says, ask for help. Ask the Holy Spirit for help. And there's things you can do, because there's usually very often a physical component to fear, isn't it? The body responds by tensing, etc., etc. You can relax the body and take deep breaths. I think there are approaches that talk about doing that, to help control your emotional states or extreme emotional reactions. Is that helpful?
Very, thank you.
Okay. So as far as practical suggestions, well, the first one is kind of one I've been harping away at again and again, was connecting with that level of mind from which spiritual guidance comes. Again, that level of mind is like it's above the battlefield and sees everything that needs to be done. Just becoming interested. Again, see, that's just, it's like it's a part of your mind, and it isn't anti-rational in a sense, although it will seem to, may seem at times that certain things it asks you to do are not rational. And if you go far into it, I mean, you will find out as you learn to trust and work, develop that capacity to receive that, that it's in your best interest, you know, when it's authentic spiritual guidance. So I think the most useful thing for anybody to do, I said this 20 years ago and I've seen nothing to change my opinion, besides the fact of living a spiritually aligned life from the highest consciousness, you know, that you are from where you are at the moment, living in that contact and that communion in addition to that, or as a part of that, seeing if you can open up to receive that guidance and direction. Now, that comes as feelings, you know, as kind of intuition. Sometimes it comes as pictures. It comes a lot of different ways. Sometimes it comes as an outside opportunity or someone comes up and says something to you. Whoa, yeah, that's what I need to hear. You know, because again, your mind includes everything, and that level of mind includes everything and everybody. So that's my mind, that's the most practical thing that anybody can do, because if, for example, you need to move or be somewhere else or need to be with other people or you need to go somewhere and help someone, that higher knowing is generally where that direction will come from. Again, and if you don't have it, then just use your common sense and your rationality and your sense of goodwill. Right? Just acting with kindness towards others, right? With an attitude of being helpful and cooperative and recognizing that my brother's interest and mine are the same. Just acting that way would already be a big improvement, wouldn't it? It'd be a big improvement. What did Aldous Huxley say at the end of his life? He said, after all he'd seen and all he'd been through, you're familiar probably with Aldous Huxley, probably most people here have heard of him. He was asked, well, what do you think humanity could do? Or what do you think, you know, to change things, to make life better? What can people do, you know, to make life better? And the only thing he came up with, he said, if people would just be a little more kind to each other. He thought that would make a difference. And I agree. I agree.
The Dalai Lama said.
Yeah, exactly. That sounds exactly like something the Dalai Lama said. Kindness is a part of love, isn't it? And it's always inclusionary. And it's always a recognition that you and I are have a common interest. And then ultimately, again, take it far enough that you and I have a common source and that we are part of the unity. All right. Now, another practical suggestion, just for the fun of it, simplify. Simplify. And again, I'm not telling anybody to give up anything. I don't think the solution to the world's problems is for us all to throw away our cars and just ride bicycles and things. That's great if you want to do it, but just it's kind of like an attitude of maybe of being willing to simplify, to let go to a certain extent, let's say my attachment to having so many things or having so much. You see, your possessions own you, even as you own your possessions, don't they? That attachment there, that thing seems to be out there, but it occupies a place in your mind and heart. It has a grip on you. So the whole attitude of just simplifying and not being so attached, it doesn't mean you have to throw everything away or give things up, but just perhaps in your mind free up a bit that sense of attachment and dependence. I think, again, referring to Krishnamurti again, he used to say it doesn't matter, you know, whether you're a rich man or a poor man, whether you have a lot of things or don't, it's your relationship with those things. And we have a lot of our, you know, things that make life more comfortable and things that are nice to have. Seems to me it's fine to have it. But just be aware of the hold they have on you. And again, this comes back to a state of mind, doesn't it? A state of mind of simplicity. I think almost all the spiritual traditions certain other classical spiritual traditions, there was always, almost always, an emphasis on simplify your life. If you can, make a little room in there for spirit and for spiritual practice. Make a little room so your mind can relax and return to its normal, its true condition, peace and depth. Okay, so simplify it. That seems like a good idea to me. And another thing, network, you know, connect up with like-minded people. Again, it seems to me, if the sort of changes that myself and others think are coming actually occur, we're going to have to help each other, and it's not going to be like the kind of help that I've noticed it seems most of us are willing to give now. We're willing to help others maybe as long as it doesn't intrude upon our personal space or push us out of our comfort zone. But I think with the very possibly the things that are going to be happening, the conditions and circumstances that may be developing, we're going to need to help each other in lots of ways. And when I say networking, I mean, you know, really connect. I mean, one thing is striking to me since I came back to the county, again, it's still, it seems how isolated everybody is. There's something about the life and the pace of life. And even the spiritual folks, there still seems to be a lot of isolation. And I think networking and connecting with like-minded folks. I'd love to see more centers. Like, I mean, what the guys are doing here at Many Rivers, letting like-minded people come together here and share and learn from each other and inspire each other, et cetera, and connect with each other. I mean, that's an invaluable service. Yeah, they sell books too, you know, and tea, and that's great too. But that is a service, you know, that they're just doing from, you know, that's, I assume, from the goodness of their hearts. And I'm grateful. We need more, you know, whether we want the individuals to sort of open their house to having activities and gatherings. I'd like to see people get together on a regular basis and just connect. I know it's too vague, but it just seems, reach out, connect, you know, let's break out of that sense of isolation and join together with your brothers. Another, to me, real practical suggestion is eat organic if you can. Again, there is that big movement of organic, raising organic food, and it's just, you know, in terms of the planet, it's exactly the thing that needs to be done, doesn't it? Because they're respecting the topsoil and the planet and not destroying the topsoil, and they're not poisoning you. Nobody in this country has a pesticide deficiency. I think I can assure you that. Nobody here, right, has a pesticide or herbicide deficiency. If they tested your body fat, this was 20, 30 years ago, they'd find 50 or 60 or 70 different solvents, some of them pesticides, herbicides, artificial chemicals, in the body fat of virtually every one of us. Although maybe if you've been eating organic for a long time, that might no longer be the case. But things tend to build up there and not be moved out as long as that fat doesn't move. So if you can eat organic and drink clean water, you're cutting things down. You're supporting the planet, supporting not continuing to damage her, and it's good for your body. It's good for you. And again, generally in spiritual practices, it seems to me, at least traditionally the way they do it, I think of the traditions from the East, you know, they often recommend a certain diet, and the body is included somehow, and the body's health and the body's natural sensitivity is a part of the process. And again, eating good food and not poisoning yourself, and again, keeping the body fairly healthy, whatever you need to do that, that's all helpful. That's all helpful to keeping your mind in the right place. Okay. And probably the last practical suggestion I have is, I mean, if you're so inclined, spend time in nature. Mother Earth's very healing. I mean, the energy's just coming right up from the earth. You develop that sensitivity, you can feel it. You can go out and sit in Mother Earth and feel yourself healed. And there's a reciprocal kind of thing going on as you bring your mind into attunement with the earth and with the spiritual forces of the planet. You're both giving and receiving. That's one thing the Course teaches, to give and to receive are one and true. So that's both helpful to the planet in that more subtle sense, and it's helpful and healing to you. And again, communication is possible. A long time ago, I got information from Mother Earth about earthquakes and things. So you can, she'll communicate, or one of those intelligences will communicate with you if that's part of what you're supposed to do. All right, so that's about all I got to say, guys. Thank you for listening. Any more questions or comments?
So do you teach the Course of Miracles?
I do.
In this area?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm extremely low-key. Yes.
So you don't advertise?
No, I don't. I was teaching a class over at Church of the Oaks for a while. I stopped that in the summer. I teach a small private class every Sunday, mm-hmm. which sometimes is in Sebastopol, sometimes is in Oakmont, and then once a month I teach a Course in Miracles over at the Oakmont West Recreation Center, and then as well teach some, you know, work with some people one-on-one as well.
So is it possible to get information on that, or is it a secret?
It's possible. Yeah. You can. I can give you my number if you want and talk to me. Uh-huh. The class on Sunday I consider a very advanced class. I'm careful about just about. It's a small class about, you know, inviting other folks. But I think if someone is appropriate, I'll invite them. And or if there were enough folks, or even if someone just wanted, you know, thought I could help them, spending a little time with me individually from time to time, I'd be happy to do it. I'm here to help, basically. There's no other reason for me to be here, quite frankly. You know? I mean, I like the place, but I'm kind of tired of it. I think a lot of people feel that way, right? You know, I'm a little tired of it. But any other questions? Guess not.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for coming, guys. Give yourself a hand. God bless you. Thank you so much. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. And
oh, that's right.
I will remind everyone that we have a donation bowl that we use to help support this store and space for talks like this, and also to share with our speakers to support their work. And I will encourage you to come back and do your holiday shopping here at Many Rivers, and we'll look forward to seeing you at other events here and in the new year. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.